For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way towards salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. Or in the words of Paul, at present we see indistinctly, as in a mirror, but then face to face. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. With me in the cave, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, Mr. Mark Tuttle. And our topic this week, gentlemen, business, work, and Catholicism. How do they relate?
Yeah, we're going to have a great guest on in a few minutes, Dr. Maximilian Torres from Catholic University of America. He's a professor of business ethics and just an all-around, well-rounded scholar. He's one of those guys that you know you talk to and kind of breadth of knowledge. He covers the full gambit. So fantastic guest. We're looking forward to having him on the show here in a few minutes.
But just a quick question: you said business ethics. Isn't that
oxymoron?
Yeah. Well, that is the question, right? Yeah. I mean, we see from time to time these headlines erupt, maybe annually even, about these great scandals that have occurred in the business world. And so, yeah, it does seem as if that's a problem.
Isn't there a new movie coming out on Bernie Madoff?
Yes, there is. Wizard of Lies. Yeah, we'll have to bring that up when we talk to him. And business, you know, is the commercial society, important topic, especially for Catholics many of our listeners work, right? You work, sometimes you work through an employer, sometimes you're self-employed, sometimes you work at home, but you cannot, as a human being, you really cannot escape work. So it's going to be important to kind of understand what work is, the context of it. But yeah, Dr. Torres is going to be a great help because he's been on the show. Not only has he been on the show before, so some of you listening will have heard that previous program, but he does bring in, Mark, like you were pointing to, he's got such a depth of knowledge about Catholic teaching that he's able to draw from that to really talk about the human person and economics and ethics and business all in a really holistic and comprehensive way.
Yeah, I mean, and sometimes it sounds funny talking about business ethics. It's true. I think the attitude is, you know, all's fair in love, war, and business. But when you start to look at sort of the ethics of business and the dignity of the person being central to it, you start to break it down a little bit and realize, you know, the enterprise, business, what we do, they're all practical sciences, as Aristotle would say. So, you know, they're all areas of learning and areas of endeavor that are directed towards some concrete goal. So, you know, step-by-step process to achieve X. But figuring out what X ought to be and why X is important, that is where you really need kind of an ethical mindset and, you know, bringing in kind of the science of ethics a little bit.
Well, and that's where my question comes in, is the fact that we talk about business ethics and then we talk about Catholic ethics. Is Catholic business ethics substantially different from the more secular business ethics that's being taught in most colleges these days?
Well, you know, in reality, none of Catholic ethics ought to be different than secular ethics. I mean, you know, one would hope, exactly. I mean, I think that's kind of our job, is to go out and make sure that Catholic ethics is the same as ethics in general.
Well, in the context of ideas, we should argue for Catholic ethics to have a primacy of place, but they're not the same. They're not the same because Catholic ethics is going to bring a certain understanding of purposes and values, nature of the human person, that are very different than some secular views of, if you have a materialistic view of the human person, and evolution, you know, macro evolution, things like this, you're going to arrive at different understandings around ethics and what's permissible and what's not.
Right. I mean, whether it's business or anything else, I mean, the ultimate reason that we do these things as human beings is because we think it's going to make us happy. And so that different conception of happiness, I think, right. is really where, you know, Catholic ethics is going to differ from secular. If happiness is understood as something hedonistic, so yeah, happiness is just maximizing my physical pleasure, you know, then obviously the course to get there
right.
looks a lot different than it does correct. Towards union with God is ultimately happiness. And well, so, you know, then the course, you know, looks very different.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just that question, just the question of the term you brought up, you know, does God exist? If your answer is no, then that's going to shape in a very different way your ethics. Your ethical systems are going to be very different if you're an atheist on some accounts, because there's a different set of understandings that are there. And I'm not saying that the atheist cannot engage in ethical behavior and ethical choices and decision making. They can. Human beings are moral agents. It's just there can be some common ground, but there's also going to be a lot of differences.
Right. I think that's part of the arena of evangelization that we as Catholics need to take out into the marketplace. Not evangelization so much in sharing our faith and inviting people to Mass, but to a certain extent being that surrogate of the ideal of the good. You know, kind of as Catholics saying, you know, we've got an understanding and conception of who the human person is, the dignity of the human person, the idea that a human being is created in the image and likeness of God. And even people who don't share that, because we have it, they can kind of share tangentially with that and sort of follow along with us if we set the standard and set the goals and you know, set the examples.
Yeah, that's where one of the things that I've observed is the fact that if we look strictly at secular business ethics, it tends to be much more utilitarian than what Catholic business ethics would
right.
be.
Very often. Or the emphasis now is really in ethics. Secular ethics really is around a couple of things. Predominantly consent and autonomy, radical individualism are really the animating features of most of secular ethics. And that is not, those are not the animating features of Catholic
right. that's,
ethics.
That's not yeah. to say that those things are bad, you know, bad things, but they can't be isolated in and of themselves. They have to be leading towards something beyond them.
Yeah, right. there's a whole virtue.
And the common good and, you know, things
yes.
like that.
Yes.
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to have a long conversation about these topics with Dr. Maximilian Torres of Catholic University of America.
And stay tuned. You are listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio, changing hearts and minds.
Found your station about a month ago, and I have never turned my station off since I found you. Every time something I take offense to comes up, y'all answer it almost immediately as to make me see through with prayer. Thank you so much for saving me.
You can help keep Catholic Radio Indy on the air by making a donation at CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Since 1968, the Motion Picture Association of America has been rating movies based on violence, language, sexual content, etc. But what if their judgment as to what's appropriate for your family is different from yours? Wouldn't it be nice to get a second opinion? Maybe one from a Catholic perspective. Catholic News Service and the former Office of Film and Broadcasting of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops have teamed up to continue the tradition of giving every movie a rating, one that you might find much more appropriate for your family. Where can you find these ratings? The easiest place is right on our website, CatholicRadioIndy.org. Right on the opening page, just look for the yellow Movie Ratings tab. When the kids ask, "Hey, can we go to the movies?" or you just want to go yourself, check out the Catholic movie ratings at CatholicRadioIndy.org. It never hurts to get a second opinion.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV?
song lyrics that are questionable or worse? Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm still Timothy O'Donnell with Mark Tuttle, and we'd like to welcome back into the Catholic Cave our good friend, our fantastic Catholic scholar, Dr. Maximilian Torres from the Catholic University of America over in beautiful Washington, D.C. Welcome back into the Cave, Dr. Torres.
Thank you very much, Tim. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, it's fantastic. Now, for our audience, if you hadn't caught a previous program, we had Dr. Torres on. You're a professor of business, and I think one of your specialties is business ethics. What we'd like to do is, does that sound about right?
Well, that is, yeah, that's my primary course at the school. I also teach leadership, organizational behavior, and something called the spirit of enterprise. But typically the work I do always comes back to character, you know, character, culture, virtues, Catholic social doctrine. So regardless of what the subject is that I teach, but that is what I do at the Catholic University of America. I'm the director of the management area as well, so I'm a management professor. We have various areas. There's finance, there's accounting. I don't teach those subjects. There's marketing, many variants of economics.
So you're really in the people business.
Yeah, well, aren't we all? I mean, aren't we all? But I'm in the education business. I guess if you can call it a business, it is. I mean, I'm sure that my colleagues in other parts of the university would cringe at the thought of academe being called the business, because I think it's a lot more privileged than that in a number of ways. It's a very privileged lifestyle. You get to read, you get to think, you get to write. Get to express your opinions. You get to deal with people. You know, at we have undergraduates and we have some graduates. And tonight I'll be teaching people in business. You know, people coming for their degree at night. But you get, no matter who you're working with, you get to work with them at a stage when they're asking questions. They want to know things. They're opening their minds, and you're constantly helping people. You know, guiding them to some understanding of something. So it really is a very privileged lifestyle.
Yeah. How is what you do as a professional educator and scholar, what do you think makes that vocation distinct and possibly even more enriching by living that out at Catholic University versus, say, a secular school?
Well, I've taught it both, in Catholic and in secular schools. I had occasion to speak about that upon conferral of an award about 2 years ago, and I just reread my remarks recently, and I'll stand by what I said then, which was I have never felt freer than I do at Catholic University of America. I always found in the secular world, you know, the secular world can be very fair and everybody's standards, it's very clear what everybody has to do. But as a Catholic, you almost have to be bilingual. You have your understanding of the world, and it's based in some understanding of God and creation and cosmos, and, you know, it's sort of, you have this kind of Thomistic top-down understanding of things. But then you have the world that you have to deal with every day, and it doesn't understand the world that way in most regards, and it tends to be much more experiential, much more subjective, much more just volitional. And my colleagues, you know, I find that many of my colleagues speak the same language as I do, you know, in that regard, and I find I'm free to say what I truly think, not just what I know I need to think or where I'm circumscribed to think. I mentioned this in my talk, and I know I'm mentioning it here. When I was hired, the provost, today's provost, who was the dean, Andrew Abella, of the business school, he told me, look, if you want to start your class with a prayer, feel free. And if you don't want to start your class with a prayer, feel free. You know, whatever I want to do is okay. And with respect to the way I open my class, the conversations I have, quite often I will sprinkle reference, you know, biblical references into my class. Catholic social doctrine, of course, is clearly, well, it's not church specific, but it emanates from my church, and it purports to be reasonable principles, you know, for reflection for everyone, not just for Catholics. But you know, if I feel like talking about Jesus Christ today, I will. And if I feel like citing the Torah, I will. I was talking about the story of Job in one of my classes, a month ago or so. And I mean, if there's something that strikes me, if there's some story, I do not feel restrained from dipping into the religious or the theological to explain something. And typically, I have lots of reasons for thinking what I think. Some of it is, you know, is theological, some philosophical, some just economic and just out and out hard-nosed, and I'm really free to explore the entire terrain. So that's the advantage that I have, where I teach, and I would wish it for everybody. I mean, most people have beliefs. When you get into secular academe, it becomes the German model. You know, everything is very empirical, everything purports to be question of fact, not of value. It's like you're precluded from getting into the interesting things about life. You're supposed to be looking at the world only on its surface, and everybody plays this game presumably thinking that this is how we're going to arrive at truth in an inoffensive manner. And I just don't think that's the case. I don't think it's a particularly fruitful exercise, or at least I never found it to be in my life. That may be my deficiency.
Yeah. Well, no, not at all. Not just your deficiency. We had a long conversation with Dr. Peter Redpath of the Adler Aquinas Institute on that exact subject of how that sort of German model of the sciences has distorted, I think, the quest for truth.
Yeah, it does seem like we've over mathematized everything, right? Where, well, as you mentioned, Dr. Torres, about everything sort of has to be quantifiable, right? And so you've got to have the data, and it's the data that wins that ought to win the day in these disagreements, and it totally misses out on all of the as you mentioned, value propositions or purposes, right? It's economic activity is often reduced to a very sophisticated Excel spreadsheet versus about sort of what the grounded in the understanding of what the human person is, or the identity of the human person, or how what are human beings for, and so all that. So that's where it becomes, I think, like you said, I like the way you frame that about you have to be in a secular institution. You do have to be bilingual because you're constantly translating concepts and terms, and also filtering, right, to your particular audience who don't have a set of understandings. They don't have the same terminology.
Or even worse, they may be predispositioned to refute or not to reject.
Yeah, hostile. There's a hostility.
When they catch hot button issue, not hot button, but with those sort of like identifiable tags. That's religious. Oh no, that has to be excluded.
Here's one.
That's a lot of reality, when you do that. And in particular, I'm in the people area of the businesses. I've always enjoyed working in business ethics because outside of business, people tend to express relativistic ideas. They say they're relativistic. Usually that means that they have their opinions and they're completely, for them, that's as objective as the Rock of Gibraltar, and everybody else has to think like they do. But in business, people are not relativistic. I mean, I've never heard anyone say, oh, it's okay that guy cooked the books, or it's okay that guy traded on information to enrich himself. And people understand it very quickly that this is wrong. It's objectively wrong.
Yeah, it's,
so what I can do in my class is I can take it a step further and say, well, yeah, and how would one do something like this? All right, like, we already know it's wrong. I don't have to spend a lot of time with you explaining to you why it's wrong to cook the books. But it's interesting to see how this guy cooked the books and, you know, what devices that were perfectly legal you used to cook the books and which ones weren't legal and why would you do this? You know, what are the reasons that drive people to do things that even they know are shady things to do, or maybe they don't know that they're shady things to do, but there's a lot of rich motivational and attitudinal and belief related issues that you can get into. And as I say, you know, where I'm at, I'm free. I can explore all of it that I'm aware of. I mean, there may be things I'm not aware of, which of course is always the case, but to the extent that my mind can know it or think it, I can relate it to my students, which is a great freedom. I mean, it's really it's a privileged quest. It's the kind of thing I think many people wish they could do in their life, but don't, you know, and it's just, I'm blessed to be able to do this.
Well, and let me reintroduce our special guest, Dr. Maximilian Torres. He's a professor of business at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. And, you know, I want a quick little plug. I heard today, I just found out there's a new movie, speaking of sort of breaking the rules and enriching ourselves. There's a new movie coming out. Robert De Niro is going to star as Bernie Madoff in an HBO production. It's called Wizard of Lies. And I think that's going to, just as you were mentioning, Dr. Torres, that's going to be a window to try to explore. This is a man who ripped off the public to $50 billion, that's with a B, and perpetuated the greatest fraud ever in world history, I would say. Well, I don't know, maybe a dictator somewhere got away with more. But at least in America, that's it. And in the business world, he is by far... he eclipses, I mean, second place is far down the ladder in terms of money stolen. But that will be, you know, so here is someone who was ostensibly already successful, powerful, wealthy, a man of some tremendous gifts of intellect and influence. And yet he goes down a very dark path.
Yeah, you know, Madoff was one that was almost so flagrant it was. I left it under my radar. I didn't want to look very much. He was a guy. He had been the chairman of the NASD, the National Association of Security Dealers. You know, that reigned over the over-the-counter markets. I believe mm-hmm. that's what it was. Now it's called something else, called FINRA. But he was a pedigreed, established guy. I mean, he had a respectable career in finance. And then he started tapping people to pull this Ponzi scheme off. I'm amazed he was able to find $50 billion, you know, in his insular, discrete communities, the ones that he mostly tapped. But, that is rather dark. I was not aware that De Niro was going to be starring as Madoff. I'll probably look at it. I did see...
The trailer's out. I watched it this morning. It's pretty powerful.
It looked good.
Yeah. I mean, if you like these. It's kind of like The Big Short, you know, where it's, you know, Hollywood at times, and there's authors like Michael Lewis and others who will chronicle. Remember Liar's Poker? There's these...
I do. Yeah, it was a wonderful book. And in The Big Short, I reviewed that book in the Journal of Markets and Morality. I thought it was... And I also interviewed with Al Cresta about that book. And that was a wonderful story. He's a great writer. I mean, Michael Lewis he's truly a cut above. A lot of people think he's artistic as well as a factual reporter. His gift, I think, lies in taking very complex transactions and relationships and simplifying them to the point where anybody can understand them.
Yeah, and turning them into a compelling story, too. I mean, he's got that.
Yeah,
that
he wrote a book called Flash Boys about flash trading about 3 years ago or 2 years ago.
I read that. That was really well done.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
It was great.
It was a magnificent book. And then I talked to a lot of people I knew in finance who just went ballistic over it and just said, oh, this is complete fantasy. This book is, you know, this has nothing to do with reality. It's blah, 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 blah. And I thought it was, I thought it was.
Well, it has a lot to do with reality, I would say. Now it's not the predominant activity of Wall Street, but he definitely tapped into a niche that's off the grid of what some things are going on. Right?
You wouldn't know that it was going on.
Correct. Yes.
If you weren't looking for it, or if you weren't in your business, and I don't know, but this guy Brad Katayama, I don't know. Did his exchange flourish?
No.
It's like, that's what makes you think, I don't know, this guy was building a story. I mean, well, your listeners probably have no idea what we're talking about.
Right. It's another example, though.
High-speed trading. Yeah. It's about getting to the floor of the exchange 1 microsecond faster than the trade behind you, because you can set an algorithm that's so sophisticated, it can intuit what the person behind you is going to do. In those couple of microseconds, the advantage that you have, and then put on a trade that capitalizes or profits on what the trade behind is coming to do, and maybe a penny. Is that a fair description of what
you're talking
about?
Yeah, and it's for pennies or fractions of a penny.
On 100 million shares. And
right.
All of a sudden it starts adding up, and it's real money. And
right.
It's virtually risk-free money.
Right.
And of course, it drives markets. And Lewis is phenomenal, and he's always written about sort of the underbelly. He writes less about morality, I think, and more just about stupidity and greed. It is morality. I mean, but he's a captivating writer. So for those in your audience who have never read him, or maybe only know him for Moneyball. He's well worth reading.
He puts you in the room with his character. I guess that's
right.
When I read his stuff, it's like you're sitting next to, you know, the Salomon Brothers bond traders as they're on one hand, you know, just shoving cheeseburgers down their throat as fast as they can, and trading hundreds of billions of dollars of treasury, you know, securities at the same time. You know, you're like, who are these guys? It's just crazy. He's crazy, right? And
I love Liar's Poker. That was very fun.
Hey, let me move the conversation over to a couple of other topics, because as usual, we're going to run out of time before you know it. But a couple of things that have come up, I think that'd be helpful for our audience to get your perspective or views on. So you mentioned a little bit earlier about, you know, Catholic social teaching. I mean, so as a Catholic, could you, I know this would take hours to fully unpack, but, you know, how should Catholics, just in broad terms, begin to think about questions of, say, economic activity, economic arrangements, economic systems, this, as you mentioned, enterprise? You know, how what might be a step or two that Catholics might take to kind of get a handle on those sorts of topics or issues from a Catholic perspective?
Well, you've asked me a question that should be simple to answer, but it's a minefield like everything else. I mean, Catholic social doctrine starts with Rerum Novarum, or at least, you know, the tradition that we call Catholic social doctrine, and it antedates that, and you could say it goes back to Jesus Christ. But Pope Leo XIII in, I think, 1891, wrote a document called Rerum Novarum, meaning new things, and he was rather concerned about the workers, about what's happening to the workers during a period of industrialization when ideologues on left and right are pressing very rigid claims about the nature and relationship of government to worker, to industry, to whatever. And this inaugurated a tradition that has gone on even till today. And I guess Laudato Si of Pope Francis would be the most recent entrant into the literature. Let me give you a simple answer, just so I can really kind of avoid the question, and then I'll come back to the question. But there's a wonderful book called A Catechism for Business, and this was put together by, again, Provost Andrew Abella when he was the dean of the business school. It's Abella and Joe Capizzi, who is a professor on the Faculty of Moral Theology at Catholic U. And what they did is they started with questions like, if I'm in marketing, are there any things that I shouldn't do? Or if I'm producing something, are there any requirements that oblige me? Or if I'm investing money, are there any considerations above and beyond return that I should be considering? Or when I have people under my concern, you know, are there certain ways I should treat them, and are there certain benefits I have to give them, and are there other benefits I really shouldn't offer them? They started with like 150 questions relating to political economy and actual practice in the various disciplines of business. And then with some special questions on pharmaceutical issues or the entertainment industry or international business. And then they went back and they got themselves a couple of research assistants, and they just mined social doctrine, mostly papal documents, but not exclusively. So there are some bishop conference documents in there and some committees on discrete topics, the statements, you know, with the Vatican's blessing on them, that they took, and they just excerpted documents and put those teachings in under the specific discrete question. They minimize their editorializing. In fact, there's extremely little in there. So it's just excerpts of Catholic social doctrine relating to specific questions. And if somebody wanted to just learn something about Catholic social doctrine and business, that would not be a bad place to start at all. In fact, I think that would be a very good place. With respect to, now coming back to the question so as to not evade it, the Catholic Church is filled with people of varying persuasions and varying inclinations towards or against business, just like every other population, the Catholic people, I should say. Yeah, just like every other population on the planet. And, for those who, I not to be tendentious here, but for those who favor arrangements that tend to enlarge the size of state and increase its protagonism, there's a lot you can read in Catholic social doctrine that would support the case for doing that. If you are of the type of the predisposition or the proclivity or the inclination to enlarge the sphere of personal freedom and perhaps minimize the role of public authorities in the activity of business and enterprise, there's a lot of stuff in Catholic social doctrine that can support that. But to be candid, there's less, because it took the church a longer time to sort of come around to, almost to come around to the American way of doing things. The church has always been very clear. Socialism is condemned. It is wrong for a variety of reasons that it states. And unbridled capitalism is condemned. It is wrong. So, between those two poles of things that are verboten, there's a lot of space. And I think a fair place to say, trying to be as objective as I can, which of course I can't be because I have my own proclivities, but I would say it's safe a place to start is with Pope Francis, who says the business is a noble vocation. So I think people should think of it as something that's a vocation. You can be called by God to do this, just like you can be called by God to do the priesthood or to do the religious life. So this is something that can serve the will of God and can be your specific calling from Him to do in the world. You can serve people through this business. It can be noble. You can achieve high goods, not just util goods, not just pleasurable goods. You can achieve noble goods through the practice of enterprise and business. We all know from common sense and practicality, and all the popes know this, that if you're going to have the billions of people we have on the planet, which thank God we do, they all have to be fed. They all, everybody has to eat. Everybody has to be clothed. Everybody has to be housed. Everybody has to have a number of goods, material goods to aid them in their quest for human flourishing, in its full dimensions, which includes spiritual and emotional and psychological and religious and social and friendship So I would say that's the place to start with your thinking about that. Now, from there, it's a noble, you know, it's not an unqualified noble good. It's not the kind of thing that can be practiced without conditions, without proper dispositions, without having your head on right, and without having your heart in the right place. And those are the issues that all human beings face, whether you're in business, or whether you're in religious life or clerical life, or whether your life is, whether your task is menial and drudgery, or whether it's high-end and very creative. I mean, we all have to wrestle with the fact of original sin. We all, the residue of it in our inclinations. We all have concupiscence. We're all prone to irascibility, to a greater or lesser extent. And we all have to get these things under control. All of our wills will turn to selfishness. If not bound by the virtue of justice, our prudence is something that has to be schooled through experience and through the wisdom of others, and that takes time. All of these business practice without those human virtues, without your right in the heart in the right place, you can do a lot of damage through it. Bernie Madoff did a lot of damage through what he did, and I could, we could spend hours, and I can just click off names of people who have really, really abused a system of free enterprise that we have to enrich themselves and to aggrandize and to do whatever, and we all know that's wrong. Yeah. What the Catholic social doctrine does is it kind of for those inclined to do right and not do wrong, it orients you. It gives us principles for social organization, it starts with human dignity. If you don't have a sense of human dignity at the center and core of everything, something's going to go wrong. So if you're marketing a drug to that helps children avoid a certain type of illness, and you're trying to expand the size of your market well beyond what the medical system can bear, for a very high-priced drug, for instance, your choice of marketing strategy, whether or not you go through doctors or whether or not you go directly to parents over the television set and try to scare them out of their wits to the point where they're clamoring in their doctor's office for a drug that may be too expensive, maybe $5,000, right? I think the right way to think of those issues or those practices would be through the lens of human dignity. If we do turn parents loose that way, what do we do? We're instrumentalizing them. We're turning them into means to our ends rather than ends in of themselves. And of course, that's a kind of ethics that's mostly associated with the name of Immanuel Kant, but John Paul II also talks about that in Gentes Musanus and in Veritate Splendor, two of his magisterial documents. So this has probably just a very too long-winded of an answer to your question, but there's a lot there. There's a lot there for anybody. The long way in, which might be the most fruitful way in, is to start with Rerum Novarum. Go to Pius XI, Quadragesimo Anno, which means 40 years after. Rerum Novarum means new things. Pius XII had a number of radio interviews on social questions. Pope John the 23rd, Pope St. John the 23rd, wrote two documents, Moderate Magistra and Pacem in Terris, Peace on Earth. So Mother and Ruler and Peace on Earth. Pope Paul VI wrote a couple. John Paul II wrote several. Pope Benedict wrote one, Deus in Caritatis in Veritate. And Pope Francis has contributed one of his own. And then there are smatterings in other documents. And that's the long way to go, and that's the truly fruitful way to go. For your listeners who pray every day, who try to spend time to let the Lord instruct them as to, how their heart should be, how their mind should be, these are good things to bring to prayer with the consent of your spiritual advisor. in my opinion. Yeah. In my opinion. They're good things to read in front of the Blessed Sacrament. But for those who are, you know, who have limited time, they may not have that practice, or they, but they want to know, you know, it's relevant to them. I think the Catechism for Business is a superb little book. It's something I use in my own classes. I have my students buy them, and then we'll refer to them, you know, I'll refer them to certain questions as we discuss certain cases in class, so that they can see magisterial teaching on issues related to what it is we're talking about that day.
Yeah, and trying to apply it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's, I appreciate that. It's a really good in-depth answer, because you gave us kind of like with that particular book, a short little way to sort of begin the journey. And then for those who are geeky, like some of us here at the Catholic Cave, if you want to take the long runway, to study. Yeah, it's such a rich patrimony that we have. So I appreciate you laying that out.
Right. Now, Dr. Torres, we're talking today with Dr. Maximilian Torres of Catholic University of America, professor of business ethics there. When you were talking, you mentioned business as a vocation. And you know, that vocation is directed towards providing the material goods to a certain extent, make sure that everybody's clothed, make sure everybody's fed, those types of things.
Well, that's part of what it is.
Exactly. I mean,
there's another part, yeah.
Right. You recently wrote an article in First Things kind of pointing out the nature of work goes beyond just the, you know, providing, you know, goods for, you know, the highest quality of goods for the lowest price available. You know, there's more to work than just that.
Absolutely. You want me to comment on that?
Yes. Yes, please.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, there is that. And Pope St. John Paul would refer to that as the objective dimension of work, sort of the what it is you produce, the what it is you're doing, the outward result of your activity. But the truly important part of work, you said, was the subjective dimension of work, that in the doing we become. And, you know, when we become more human, more who we are, through our activity and the dispositions we bring to them and the reasons we do them and the offerings we make of them, we grow in on the interior. And and now you're looking at something, well, we're not looking at it, God is looking at it, but it is happening to us in reality, that subjectively we're growing as people through our work. And that's a different aspect altogether than what it is we're producing, you know, what forms we're producing, what holes we're digging, what steaks we're cooking, whatever, you know, whatever our work is. And then there is this social dimension of work. I mean, there's an apostolic dimension to work as well. Work is how we contact each other. I mean, you and I are talking today because of your work. You know, it is your work to find radio guests, and forgive me for being crass, but it's like, we're creating a society of three people with a society of however many thousands of people listen to you through your work. And we're all bound through your work. So, and then through my work, you know, I'm engaging in this circle. And this is how, you know, there's something very social and human, because man is a social animal, and apostolic. I mean, and it's not always apostolic because you're listening to people talk about religious things. Quite often, you know, it can be apostolic just because you're watching somebody do something so well that it really is a marvel. Or you know, it can be apostolic insofar as it creates opportunities for you to talk to other people about meaningful things in the middle of your work. And that's what work provides us. I mean, it's a very rich field. I mean, it's what God gave us to move our lives, our societies, and our material needs forward, you know, to supply our material needs while we do all these other things. It's really a beautiful gift.
Yeah, and that enrichment for society is something that you honed in on in your article. That, you know, you started talking about the carrier deal that happened earlier this year, where, you know, jobs were preserved here in Indiana
before the impeachment.
Right.
Yeah.
It happened shortly after election, while they were just
dreaming about impeachment.
Right, exactly. Right, right.
But long before they were talking about it.
Well, aren't the Russians involved somehow?
Yeah.
With the carrier deal?
Yeah. But anyway, going back to... Going back to the carrier deal, everybody looked at the bottom line of that for the value of it. Everybody looked at, you know, the number of jobs saved, the amount of economic activity that it was going to create. But you pointed out there's a social dimension and a social benefit to these jobs that go far beyond just sort of the economic bottom line.
Yeah,
especially in that community in Indiana. And there's 800 people, probably, who are most of whom are neighbors, and, you know, or live in the same neighborhood, and those people are going to be growing through their work, and they're not going to be living through the scourge of unemployment, or they're not going to be scrambling and going somewhere else or moving to a different state to find something to do. And it's like there is some social cohesion that benefits from the decision to keep those 800 people there, which is a good thing. It is a good thing, you know, and I understand there are other values at stake, economic efficiency being one of them, you know, being the most notable. But, you know, my argument was that's great, but that's an inferior value. That's a subordinate value to the value of human flourishing and human society and, you know, human development of people in this country. And I think the hardest question I was asked by somebody about, well, why is the value of a human life and human flourishing more important in the United States than it is in Mexico, where the jobs would have gone? And I answered that question. I mean, the article came out in the March issue of First Things, and the questions came out in the May issue of First Things. And I was really surprised. It was a short article. It was only a 3-page article. It was one of the brief ones in the front of the magazine, but it got the most questions in articles in that issue, and I got three of them. But
I think there's a tension going on right now in the world, and I think this manifests itself in the last election of those people who kind of see, I guess, this progression towards globalism and the progression towards making an international community and expanding the community of benefits out as far as we possibly can versus those who are more, connected to local communities and concerned about local communities and honestly taking care of our own to a certain extent before we worry too much about what's going on in other countries. So I think, you know, that tension very much showed up, I guess, in all of those questions towards your article.
It's a pendulum swing. And we have swung for decades towards... And incidentally, I think it's a very good thing. I think we have raised the standard of living by going global for people all around the world. And we have been able to bear the hardships of it in our own communities. The government has been strong enough to create a safety net for people, and social networks have been strong enough to, you know, to have, presumably, to have family members fall back on them, and, you know, in need. And, you know, it's been a good for the world. It's a question of, you know, what works over the long period, over the long haul, and what won't work over the long haul. And I think the right answer to that question is, maybe the economists have that over the long haul, for the most people, you know, let the jobs flow to where the market takes them. And that will eventually spread and lift and everything. The problem, and I don't mean to be a Philistine, but the problem is that we live now. You know, our lives are lived in the present, not 50 years from now in that glorious future where the world standard of living is lifted and everybody has work. And then we all want that. But what we don't all want to do is to sacrifice our present and our family and our home and our communities and our existence to that what can begin to look like a utopian dream. And pendulum swing on this question. For a long time, we have swung to get, you know, offshore the jobs,
take the jobs to, you know, to Mexico, where you can get somebody to work for a quarter of the price, you know, for 30% more days of the year. And I mean, I don't mean to, you know, belittle Mexicans, but at some point it was like that in China and in Myanmar and in a number of the countries and in India where jobs went. And you really could get people to work for 40 cents a day, 330 days a year. And the laws relax sufficiently to enable corporations to avail themselves of that led to a flood of affordable consumer goods and goods of all types, you know, flowing through an international economy. You know, there were benefits to it, and it also led to rising standards of living in those very countries. Now you can't get them to work for 30 cents. You get them to work for $3 or $2.20, and they deal with the inflationary effects, and they deal with the rest of it. But you know, that's just where things have gone, and perhaps it was rightfully so. I mean, it just so happens that, you know, a politician came along and sensed anxiety about this arrangement, which lifts all boats over the long run and enriches some famously in the short run, but impoverishes others. And, you know, this politician came along and he sensed the anxieties. He intuited the fault lines in the American electorate, and he responded to them. You know, someone said he exploited them. Fine, great, whatever. He responded to them, and those people voted for him. And he won the election. And then he made good on his promise. You know, sensing their anxieties, he you know, starting with Carrier, but it's not just Carrier. I mean, it's been Ford. It's been Tesla. It's been, you know, a number of companies, Google, you know, that have, with great fanfare now, okay, we're going to keep the jobs here. We're going to spend $1 billion here in the United States of America. And, okay, great, great. So, you know, the political has moved the economic. And should this perpetuate for too long, I don't know. Maybe prices will rise too high. And maybe poverty overseas will be too unbearable for everyone to see. And I don't know. And there will be a different fault line. And there will be different tensions in electorates. And there will be a different politician who comes sensing them and intuiting them. You know, it's just like, for the time being, this is the issue. The issue is keeping the jobs here. And to my mind, unlike to a number of economists' minds, that's not an altogether bad thing. And it's a good thing if it causes us to take a look at why the work is so important. And it's not just the money. It's not just the living, and those things are really important to everybody. But especially where you are, this is Indiana, this is your state, you know. But it's about what the work means to the people. It's about what the work means, you know, to the families. It's about what the work means to the human enrichment. Somehow, it just strikes me as a moment where we might reorient our thinking about the nature of work and its relationship to the human person in a fruitful way, you know, in a way that will benefit not just people and not just the country, but even the economists and everybody.
And you know what, though, Dr. Torres, our work here is done. We're out of time. Yeah, no, that was great. Thank you so much. I mean, you really helped us see and begin to get a set of understandings about how work is not just as important as the economic part of it is, or the transactional part of labor for money or goods, but how much more important it is about how it builds up or even destroys the human person in that setting. And how work is just something we take for granted, I think, sometimes too, in terms of its how it brings us together like it has today here in the Catholic Cave. But our guest today has been Dr. Maximilian Torres. He's a professor of business at the Catholic University of America, a great friend of the show. I feel like I wanted to talk about maybe cutting corporate taxes and things like that. We didn't get there, so we're going to have you back real soon.
All right, and that is all the time we have for the Catholic Cave for today. I'm Kent Blanford, along with Timothy O'Donnell and Mr. Mark Tuttle. Until next time, may God bless.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Catholic Cave. If you have a question or comment regarding this program, please address an email to Kent, K-E-N-T, at CatholicRadioIndy.org or call 317-870-8400. Replays of this program are available on podcast at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Just click on the programming tab, then go to podcasts of local programs.